Good afternoon. It's the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Public Safety. It is June 7th, 2017. I am opening the public hearing on Senate Bill 844 relating to inmate trust account monies. John, would you actually open us up and walk us through Senate Bill 844?
Co-Chair Winters, members of the committee, Senate Bill 844 allows the Department of Corrections to collect certain monies from an inmate trust account if the inmate owes court-ordered financial obligations, such as compensatory fines, restitution awards, court-appointed attorney fees, child support obligations, or civil judgments. The measure directs the Judicial Department and Department of Justice to provide an account to DOC of the obligations owed by each inmate. Initial data reported by DOC indicates that inmates, on average, have around $120 per month deposited into their individual trust accounts, but of course those amounts can vary substantially by inmate. The amount of money that might be collected and deposited into the criminal fines account as a result of this measure is indeterminate. One note on the fiscal, the Department of Correction notes that their current information technology system that tracks inmate trust accounts, they refer to it as TAG, is not currently capable of processing the payments that would be necessary under this measure. They do have a proposal in their 17-19 budget that includes $500,000 of Article 11Q bonds to upgrade the system. Of course, that planned upgrade did not take into account this bill. If the upgrade were to happen and then this bill were to happen, that would be an additional $275,000 in bonds to finance the one-time enhancement. There is a minimal fiscal impact as a result of this measure for the Department of Revenue, Department of Justice, and Judicial Department in terms of coordinating this collection of monies.
Thank you, John. We have two people signed up. Do you want to come up together? You want to come up alone? And Kevin has already stood up, Kevin Neely, and Liz Craig from DOCA. I think you can probably be nice to each other.
Yes, we can.
And I see, you know, I can't have a direct, but I know I saw that there's District Attorney Foot. You sure you don't want to come up, too?
No, they're better than I am. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. You want me to go first?
Yes, please.
Okay. Co-Chairs Winters and Stark, members of the committee, for the record, Elizabeth Craig with the Oregon Department of Corrections, and I'm here to provide some information on Senate Bill 844. This bill is the result of the Inmate Financial Accountability Work Group, who had members from a cross-section of public safety stakeholders, including DOC, both of our labor partners, AOCE and AFSCME, the Oregon District Attorneys Association, Crime Victim Advocates, Community Corrections, OCD, DLA, the Judicial Department, and DOJ. And you previously heard about this bill from our director as we presented to you during phase one and phase two of our budget presentation. So the work group met throughout 2016 to better understand the mechanics of inmate money movement, our current accounting and trust processes as it relates to inmate money, and to develop some recommendations. And those recommendations are now reflected in Senate Bill 844. The bill would do two primary things. It would allow DOC to collect a certain portion of inmate monies for two purposes. One, to go towards court-ordered financial obligations, such as victim restitution, court fines and fees, compensatory fines and fees. It's all detailed in the bill. And then secondly, to establish a reentry savings account for each adult in custody to be used upon release. So these two elements place an emphasis on both accountability and rehabilitation, both of which are critical to our mission. And again, this is the result of strong collaboration among public safety stakeholders, and we are pleased to be here and we'll answer any questions that you have.
Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee, for the record, Kevin Neely representing the Oregon District Attorneys Association. I'm really here on behalf of District Attorney Rod Underhill from Multnomah County. He was our representative on the work group. He has submitted written testimony that was presented to the Senate committee when this was first heard. I really thank the Department of Corrections for the work they've done in spearheading this effort. This is one of those bills that really does help everyone involved. It helps the offender prepare for release. in ways they aren't currently often able to help prepare themselves. It helps the victims of crime because they can at least have a small amount applied towards their restitution. And it helps the community in general because any other fees or costs that are going to be incurred, the offender gets to start clearing those off their record before they are out of the system. So all of those components combined make this a really nice piece of legislation that really does allow us all to hold hands and walk across the finish line together in a way that I think will be positive for everybody.
Any questions of either member? I see yes, Reverend Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So give me an idea of what this might look like in terms of somebody who pretty much makes the minimum, which is, I think, $30, right? $30 a month if they have a job.
Roughly.
If they have a job. What percentage might somebody have taken out of their account on a monthly basis, say if they had a $5,000 fine and child support that they weren't fortunate enough to know that they could sign out of?
Sure. Co-chairs and Representative Sanchez, the percentage that would be taken off of any money that comes in to that individual would be 10%, which would go to those court-ordered financial obligations if the person has them, and an additional 5% that would go into their reentry savings account. Now, once that reentry savings account reaches $500, then a full 15% would go to the court-ordered financial obligations until those were satisfied.
So if somebody actually run that by me one more time. So I'm trying to figure out if the $500 is what the saved money that somebody actually saved?
Correct. So the mandatory reentry savings account would be a protected account that would not be able to be essentially touched or collected from. That would then go to that person upon release so that they had a little bit of a nest egg, for lack of a better word, in order to better transition back into the community.
Okay. And follow up. So if they got it up to $500, then you'd take 15% off of that. Is that what you just said?
That's correct.
Okay.
Now, the individual also would have the option to voluntarily keep contributing to their reentry savings account if they wanted to keep doing that.
So, Madam Co-Chair, I have a concern with this type of a bill because I understand the emphasis of helping people get to a place where they're paying back any fines that they owe or anything like that. And to a degree, I really do get that part. My struggle is that, these folks are making such minimal amounts of money, if anything. And that tends to be the situation, that if anything.
Rep Sanchez, those kind of conversations are in policy. The bill is down here in budget. Our decision here is to whether or not we're going to go forth from a budgetary standpoint. So if you don't want to vote for it, fine, but this is not a policy discussion, which is what you're raising. If there are some budgetary issues, I'm fine.
Okay. So the money issue is it's a minimal impact at best for someone, given that somebody might only make $30 to $40 a month. It is a minimal impact somebody had to be in prison for a very, very long time to be able to make that a greater impact. So I just don't see the point of it.
My question is, and John, the fiscal impact that you had mentioned the amount that it would take in order to make the system to where they could actually set up the trust account?
Correct, Co-Chair Winters, members of the committee. So there's the issue is the current system couldn't accomplish this. There is a proposal to upgrade that system, but that upgrade didn't include this sort of tracking of inmate trust accounts. So there would need to be first the upgrade of the system and then the system being able to do this. So the total cost of that is $775,000.
Ms. Craig, was there plans to do this, do your upgrading your system before this particular piece of legislation.
Yes, Co-Chair Winters, members of the committee, to clarify, we did include in our 2017-19 agency request budget a policy option package for $500,000 in order to upgrade our inmate trust accounting system to a more stable version. This is a very outdated system we've been using. And so that was carried forward in the governor's budget. In addition, in order to do what this bill would require us to do, we need to make some additional investments into the system. And that's what you see as the fiscal on this bill, which is about $318,000, the majority of which is other funded bond dollars.
Question. You currently have trust, do you not, for in your system for individuals who are trying to save money or do have dollars in that are inmates? How do you handle those now?
Senator Winters, members of the committee, yes, each individual who is in our custody has a trust account where money can come in from family members, where they where the money comes, their monetary award for their work and programming goes into that account. What we don't have is a system by which we can do this type of accounting and payment towards those court-ordered obligations in a systematic way. And so that's what these investments would allow us to do.
We've had several work groups to talk about the issue of fines and dollars that are owed to both victims as well as to the courts. And we also, and I know that I believe it was Senator Frederick, wasn't that your bill?
Yes.
The bill to talk about the delay, particularly on some of those fines, so that we weren't adding interest and some of those, and maybe the good senator would weigh in on how this bill would either enhance the bill that that we passed or have an adverse effect.
There's, if you will, Madam Chair, the bill that we passed is primarily dealing with court fees. It's not dealing with restitution. It's not dealing with, and it basically allows the court fee portion of any sort of debt to be worked off in community service, depending on different. Groups, nonprofit groups in a particular county or jurisdiction, they could determine how they might want to work that off. But the bill that we passed was primarily just court fees, not the restitution fees, not the civil payments, because we were discovering that there were additional court fees, including things like even probation visits were being charged to people who have been recently released.
Well let me rephrase. We did pass legislation that was the legislation from Marion County Commissioner that stops the clock, if you will, on the amount of interest and what have you, so that we're not piling on more and more debt. So I'm sorry, that's what I was referring to.
That was a different bill. Trying to do the same thing.
It's trying to do the same thing, because I think it's with trying to make certain that the individual, that as they return back to the community, that they're able to actually return without having several thousands and thousands. But it has always been the intent where, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, where individuals, if they have the resources to be able to start beginning to pay, if they can, restitution and some of the cost child support while they are incarcerated. So I don't think that there's anything that says that those debts are forgiven. That's right.
But Senator Winters, that is correct. And if I may just add one thing, we did spend quite a bit of time researching how other states are doing this, because what we wanted to do was come up with a recommendation with the work group that we felt we could implement, and we could implement it so that it would be doable and safe for those in our custody and those who work in our facilities. And so based on the research and what we found with other states, we came up with this proposal, which is now reflected in the bill, and we feel that the percentages are doable. We've seen other states, in particular Hawaii is one state who started out at this place, what we've come up with in the bill. And over time, they've actually increased the amount that they're collecting after they gave it some time to see how it worked. So we feel like this is a good starting point.
Okay. Senator Steinhardt and then Representative Sanchez.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I want to circle back to something you said, Ms. Craig. You said that the source for the funds, both for the initial $500,000 ask and this one, would be bonding?
Oh, we're talking about the
I understand that, but for the cost of the IT and all of that would come out of bonding?
Senator Winters and Senator Steiner Hayward, yes, it would be $275,000 in bond funding. There would be $40,000 in other fund bond issuance costs, and it would be about $3,600 general fund in ongoing maintenance, and that's the total of $318,000.
Isn't that an awfully expensive way of doing this?
And that's part of my question. And the other part of my question is I thought the state was moving towards paying for smaller projects like this in cash because it was cheaper to do that rather than pay the debt service on $1 million, even though bond rates are low. That's not your bailiwick, I understand, but it's part of my concern. But if this project, from a fiscal perspective, I have to say that I'm leaning toward Rep. Sanchez's perspective. I mean, if it's going to cost us an additional $300,000 just to do this, it's not clear that the juice is worth the squeeze here, even though I believe wholeheartedly in getting people on track to pay off their debts in these arenas. The principle, I think, is a good one, but the execution seems problematic.
I think for me it's the cost, the debt service for bonding would be the fiscal issue.
Yeah.
So this is a public hearing, by the way. This is not a work session, just so you know, Representative Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is, of course, a huge concern. We are in a place, of course, where money is an issue, and how much we're spending on things that we don't already have is a large issue. I think it relates very well, in my opinion, to folks who are incarcerated and don't have a lot as it is. I don't think it's cost effective either, the state's end of having to, put those things in or to have a debt service on it. I don't think it's also it doesn't make sense to me that the minimal impact that victims may get from that is going to make a huge difference. I also think that, prepping people is very, very important, but I think we can do that in a different way. Helping people get to a place where they are able to actually get a job on the way out the door, that might be, make it easier for them to pay. Figuring out how we as a system design our programs so that people are not stuck with not being able to get a job might be a better way to do it. I just don't think financially this makes sense. It's putting too much money in. It's for a very little return.
Do you have anything to add to that?
Madam Co-Chair, I would only point out one thing that I would just say if we can help just, again, 10 offenders that are coming out and are able to go and get an apartment and not commit a crime that puts them back in prison, it pays that cost. I'm loosely playing in a number field that I ought not play in, but assuming that it's about $30,000 a year, if we could just, and again, I can't tell you that that's going to happen here, but I can tell you that if having a little bit of money when they come out the door to be able to go get that first apartment can move the dial, that might be helpful. So I'll make that effort to try to support it.
I think there's several components here. There are several principles here. There is the principle of the ability to teach responsibility. There is the principle here to be able to have some dollars with which to come out the gate with that you don't have otherwise. And then there is the principle, since there is the work towards restorative justice that's also at play in this particular piece. And so mine is from the fiscal piece, is whether or not we can figure out whether or not looking at your system and whether your system can be applicable to this without going into debt service, and maybe that's further conversation. But actually the principles at play here, with setting up an account, and it's not, it's because accounting already somehow exists inside of the system. It's how we expand that to this particular universe and have the equipment to do so. So I do think that there is a lot of pluses that are involved in this kind of approach, particularly since we, you know, have started down this pathway with the Marion County piece that actually asked the revenue and our other part of the system to delay piling on interest so that individuals aren't coming out with an enormous amount of debt. Then, and two, what's the work that's being done by the, with the bill that Representative Fredericks. So I think we're all trying to work towards making reentry back into the community as efficient and giving the tools that individuals hopefully can have with which to reestablish their lives with. So did I see Mr. Dempsey back there? Did he do you have anything to add for the people that you represent? Anyone that that are there? Okay. Are there any additional questions or comments? Everybody's quiet. Well, if there's no further comments or questions, then I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 844, and with that, we are adjourned. We are adjourned.